Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. There are more than 21,000 advertised job openings in Broward County, according to career source Broward. David Henschel says he has 277 open hiring requisitions alone at the company he runs in Fort Lauderdale. Henschel is the CEO at Citrix Systems. It's a $13 billion company with headquarters here in South Florida and in Silicon Valley. If all those requisitions turn into jobs at Citrix in Fort Lauderdale, that would mean about one out of every 100 job openings in Broward County are with just one company, a company that is transforming itself from a more traditional software firm into a major cloud computing player, and one that is bringing back hundreds of millions of dollars from overseas thanks to the new federal tax law. Now, the company's hunt for new employees comes after two rounds of layoffs over the past 2 years. It has worked to change its business model into one focused on subscriptions to its cloud-based technology services. Most recently, it announced a round of layoffs in October. In 2015, it cut about 1,000 employees and contract workers across its global operations. Only a handful were in Fort Lauderdale, though. You will hear the CEO Henschel refer to these as a rebalancing in our interview. They are the consequence of the company's strategic shift driven by the fast-changing way companies are buying and using software and an activist investor pushing for Citrix to concentrate its business on higher profit areas. And it's working.
Business is really strong right now. It's strong across all of our geographies and really all of our product lines.
That's CEO David Henschel. We spoke in his office at Citrix's headquarters in Fort Lauderdale less than a week after the company reported its best quarterly operating profit in 15 years. When you take out the costs of the company's layoffs and other restructuring expenses. When publicly traded companies report their quarterly results, it's common for them to have two sets of numbers, and it's allowed. One set is referred to the GAAP results, GAAP with two A's. It stands for Generally Acceptable Accounting Principles. These are the results that can take into account everything that a company experienced financially over the previous 90 days. Using this accounting, Citrix lost money in the final 3 months of the year, $284 million. That includes the money Citrix spent on restructuring its business, like employee severance packages. It also includes millions of dollars in taxes because Citrix is bringing back to the United States a lot of money it had been holding overseas. This is a direct result of the new tax law, and we will talk more about that with the Citrix CEO later on in this program. But if you ignore these costs, the company's profit grew over the past year. That's the result the company, and Wall Street, frankly, tend to focus on. The argument for excluding the severance and tax charges is that they are not part of normal ongoing business. Beyond the profit accounting, though, Citrix sales have been increasing. Fourth quarter sales jumped at its fastest pace of the year, with sales increasing across the globe. About 40% of Citrix's business is outside the United States. Here's the CEO, David Henschel.
We just closed a year with over 30% operating margins. We generated a tremendous amount of cash flow, and it allows us to continue to reinvest back into R&D, security, for example, as well as broader enterprise computing, cloud computing, requires a continuous reinvestment process. So innovation has been a big focus of Citrix. We have doubled the rate of new patent filings across the company. We've almost doubled the rate of new product introductions, and we're doing that at the same time that our product quality index actually goes up. So we're moving faster with more purpose and higher security. So all of these things are tightly interrelated.
You're doing it in a financial environment for Citrix, where revenue was growing in the fourth quarter at its fastest quarterly rate in a decade and a half, but yet the total amount of revenue is smaller now than it was just a couple of years ago.
Yes, that's right. Actually, about a year ago, we made the decision to spin out one of our large businesses. It was really focused on individuals and prosumers, while the rest of our company was focused on, you know, large and mid-sized enterprise.
Now, that's corporate speak for big and mid-sized companies. What Henschel is referring to is Citrix selling the business that's probably most recognizable outside of technology circles. It's GoTo business, GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar, and other products. They were big hits for Citrix, allowing people to hold secure video conferences and share desktop or laptops over the internet. Citrix spun off the business 18 months ago, merging it with a company out of Boston called LogMeIn. The result has meant a smaller Citrix Systems in terms of total revenue, but a company that makes a higher profit margin on the sales it has.
And so it gave us the ability to really just enhance our focus and complete this current, you know, strategic evolution that allows us to not only accelerate our solutions to the cloud, but bring together our enterprise technologies into an integrated set of technologies that we call the workspace. It's about delivering solutions versus individual products.
And so that has resulted in a smaller revenue number for the company, but yet Citrix on a profitability basis is more profitable than it was 2 years ago.
It's only a smaller revenue number simply because we have, you know, sold that part of the business. Overall, when you pull that out, we just closed a year with record total revenue, record profits, record cash flow, and really good financial momentum coming out of the second half of the year.
So when you look at continuing operations, operations that have year over year always been with the company, the financial aspects look pretty good. And your 2018 guidance looks like what?
2018 guidance is calling for more growth across the board, but we're also going through a very rapid cloud acceleration. What I mean by that is we're transforming our engagement model with customers from selling a perpetual license product, really a one-time license, to a subscription service where we are selling every day an ongoing continuous engagement model with customers. And that subscription is really the biggest shift. In the Q4 of the quarter we just closed, about 30% of our mix came from subscriptions. In 2018, we expect that to be over 40%. So that's really the big shift going on. Despite that, we're planning on growing at the same time.
Yeah, Citrix is a company in transition with your leadership, and I want to talk more about that. Part of that transition a few months ago resulted in layoffs for the company. What can you tell us about the number of layoffs that the company has dealt with over the past several months during this transition?
Yeah, honestly, it was about a rebalancing of skill sets around where we're going to transform towards the cloud. So it was more about changing the types of skills we had on board, pruning some of our product portfolio to areas that were just not core strategic to where we're going. And now we're in broad expansion mode. We have 277 open hiring requisitions just in Fort Lauderdale alone. In fact, we have nearly 500 across the company right now. So we're expanding both locally as well as around the globe.
So the job cuts that were announced in October, have you more than made up with them with these new rebalancing opportunities that you talk about?
We will by the next couple of quarters. We'll certainly be ahead of where we were at that point in time.
What was the impact on the local, on the Fort Lauderdale workforce with those job cuts and with the almost 300 openings you mentioned now?
Not too much. I mean, these were rebalancings that were occurring throughout the world. So it wasn't really targeted towards any one individual location necessarily. So by the middle of this year, we'll be substantially higher than we've ever been in Fort Lauderdale.
In 2015, there was another round of, I think, 1,000 layoffs then. The layoffs are over with now? Can you say that?
Yeah, I mean, these are one-time rebalancings that we do. All organizations go through various cycles, and whether we're expanding or contracting a specific product line, a specific geography, and just the ordinary cycles that are associated with business. But in terms of what we're trying to accomplish, as I said, we're absolutely in growth mode right now. I'm just coming off a very strong Q4. Expanding our headcount is really a function of driving the business forward through this transition.
David Henschel, CEO at Citrix Systems, based in Fort Lauderdale. The business transition at the company has meant more hiring in South Florida. About 1,700 people work at Citrix now in Broward County. That's 100 more than in 2014, before the company went through two rounds of layoffs. And it does not count the almost 300 open job requisitions at the company now. The jobs range from software engineers to sales and marketing to business analysts. Citrix's hiring plans come as Broward County's unemployment rate already is low, just 3.4% in December. It's among the lowest unemployment rate of any county in South Florida. Still to come as our conversation with the Citrix Systems CEO David Henschel continues, the new tax law and bringing home billions of dollars.
Before, there was a concept of, you know, permanently reinvested earnings or, you know, cash that we referred to as trapped overseas. That barrier has basically gone away under the new tax laws.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Since December, dozens of companies have announced they will be bringing back to the United States hundreds of billions of dollars of profits earned overseas. This is the result of the tax bill Congress passed and President Trump signed into law in December.
We're going to bring back probably $4 trillion from overseas. Nobody knows the exact number, but it's massive. It'll be over $3 trillion. It could be $5 trillion, but it's a tremendous amount of money that was caught overseas, that the bureaucracy plus the tax laws didn't allow it to reasonably be brought back into our country. So we think at least $4 trillion is going to be brought back.
This is what's called repatriation. Before the new tax law, companies doing a lot of business overseas didn't have to pay U.S. taxes on those profits as long as the money stayed offshore. If the money was brought back to the United States, it could face a tax rate as high as 35%. The tax law requires those companies to bring back the cash, and in doing so, they face a much lower tax to do it, 15.5% on cash, as low as 8% on non-liquid assets. It's a huge savings, even if the companies have to do it. The last congressional effort to bring back U.S. corporate profits from overseas was in 2004, when the one-time return tax rate was slashed to just 5.25%. More than $300 billion was brought back by corporate America then. Today, the change in the tax law is expected to return more than $2.5 trillion, though President Trump, as you heard, thinks it could be more. Citrix Systems in Fort Lauderdale is one of the companies bringing back its overseas profits. It had $2 billion overseas, and it is returning that to the United States. It's just one of two ways the tax law affects Citrix. The other is a lower corporate tax rate overall for future profits, down from 35% to 21%. We talked about these changes and what they mean for Citrix Systems in Fort Lauderdale with CEO David Henschel.
Like a lot of global technology companies, we have revenue coming from all parts of the world. And because of that, we had cash that had accumulated in various geographies around the world. The tax law allows us to repatriate that. So we announced that in Q4. We're going to be repatriating over $2 billion from offshore locations back to the U.S. That'll help fund continuing M&A. Opportunities that'll fund capital return for shareholders. It'll fund reinvestment back in the business. Just a lot of different things giving us more flexibility along the way. In terms of immediate changes, like a lot of companies, we'll take a little bit of a measured approach. We'll, you know, wait and see in terms of exactly what those opportunities are going forward. On an ongoing basis, our aggregate tax rate comes down across the globe. We will be a more profitable company.
That's thanks to the lower tax rate for businesses. As far as the $2 billion Citrix is bringing back from overseas, last week the company announced it was speeding up the buyback of its own stock. It is spending $750 million on buying its own shares between now and April. Now, the practice of companies using their repatriated money to buy their own stock has led to criticisms of claims that the lower tax rate will help fuel higher worker wages and hiring. Last week, the White House released data finding more than 300 companies had announced worker bonuses since the tax law was signed. But the White House fact sheet did not mention companies using the tax savings to buy their own stock. This is Democratic Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon last week on Capitol Hill.
The first priority of multinational corporations receiving the biggest tax windfall was to present nearly $100 billion in giveaways to their wealthy investors and senior executives. These excessive payments come in the form of stock buybacks.
A stock buyback is when a publicly traded company uses some of its profits, or borrows money, to buy its own stock. It can help increase the stock price and boost earnings per share since there are fewer shares in the market. Now, Senator Wyden's analysis finds companies have announced almost $100 billion of stock buybacks since the beginning of the year when the tax law went into effect. A separate analysis from stock market research firm Barini Associates puts the announced stock buyback total at almost $90 billion. It says this year is off to the second highest start for stock buybacks since the end of the Great Recession. Back to our interview now with Citrix Systems CEO David Henschel.
The cash that Citrix will be bringing back to the United States from its overseas operations, you mentioned a number of places where some of that money will go, return to shareholders via stock buybacks, perhaps a dividend being considered. Is that on the table as well?
I think all forms of capital return are on the table. I mean, when we prioritize it internally, we focus on things that'll grow the business first, like mergers and acquisitions, and those could be everything from just accelerating our own technology roadmap to new product areas and ideas. Continuous process to look at that. The other is capital return. We have done that for, you know, well over a decade, and it's just as a profitable company, it's one of the things we continue to return money to our shareholders. Historically, it's always been in the case of or in the form of share repurchase. We'll consider a dividend going forward. You know, we're at a mature state that, you know, nothing to announce, nothing that's been decided. However, it's an open conversation.
Also, what about that investment in people and in research and development and capital? As you know, the political tenor of this conversation or debate around tax legislation, those who supported it mentioned companies like Citrix that held a good amount of cash overseas, enticed them to bring it back to the United States and invest back in the United States in a way that is different than the return to shareholders, but invest in workers or in salaries.
Well, these are all activities that we would have done regardless, and we have been doing for some period of time. This just gives us more flexibility going forward, having this type of access to capital. When we think about the amount that we've invested over the years in terms of R&D, the numbers go into the billions. We talk about our employee base. As a high-tech employer, we tend to have average salaries and benefits that are a multiple of what the average across any geography would be. And then when it comes to ongoing training and career development, I mean, these are major focus areas of ours, because in a labor market where very technical skills are often in small supply, being able to attract and retain and enhance our team is critically important to us.
Is there a portion of that overseas capital that's coming back that you are anticipating going to either employee retention or increasing the headcount of Citrix within South Florida specifically?
Like I said earlier, we have, you know, well over 200 open positions right now across South Florida. So I wouldn't directly connect them one for one. It just happens to be in the ordinary course of how we're running the business. Having access to overseas capital will just give us more flexibility.
And what about going forward? About 40%, I think, of Citrix's business is generated overseas. Do you anticipate continuing to bring those dollars back into the United States?
On an ongoing basis, I expect to. I think this will give us much more access to our ongoing global free cash flow, and really the thing that opens up more flexibility for the business than anything else, actually. And so as we think about mergers and acquisitions going forward, as we think about capital return, we think about other capital investments, whether it is work that we're doing to expand our real estate footprint, enhance our facilities, these are all things that, you know, we'll continue to do as we grow and expand the company.
And that expectation of those foreign-derived sales coming back, to continue that, is that driven by the lower corporate tax rate, or are there other considerations that Citrix has thought about that the lower one-time repatriation under the tax legislation just kind of helped speed up?
No, it's actually the tax legislation itself changed some of the laws so that we can now have access on an ongoing basis to foreign earned profits. So that's really the driver.
So it lowered the cost of you being able to have access to that sales?
Significantly. Before, there was a concept of, you know, permanently reinvested earnings, or, you know, cash that we referred to as trapped overseas. That barrier has basically gone away under the new tax laws.
And how about on the employee benefit side? Is this influencing how you're looking at compensation?
I wouldn't say it directly one for one is. We always look at total rewards in a holistic sense. And so when we think about everything from base compensation, bonus compensation, equity compensation, and then just the totality of all the types of benefits that we bring to employees, I mean, we tend to, you know, think about it much more of that entire picture. And then we'll balance that against the types of competitors that we are, you know, we're fighting for when it comes to retaining and recruiting great people.
Do you feel the tax legislation and also the regulatory environment has influenced the business that Citrix is seeing with its information technology partners?
I think it's too early to say whether tax reform by itself has influenced the overall demand environment. In general, we're operating in a pretty good time globally right now, where we have all of our major geographies in an expansion mode from a broad economic standpoint. Over time, the tax structure in this country, you know, looks like it should help, you know, grow the U.S. economy. And if that's the case, then it should generally be positive for everyone.
In other words, kind of all the horses are pulling in the right direction for you. Is there, among the geographies that you're operating in, where is the greatest opportunity for growth that you see?
We actually have a lot of opportunity everywhere. I'm not sure that I would call out a specific geography. We've done a lot of transformation across Citrix specifically in all parts of the world, and so every geography is expanding. I think the bigger opportunity for us is as we transform the company and get more of our customers engage with our cloud services, we can just add a lot more value. We can add a lot of value to their infrastructure. We can simplify a lot of the ongoing management of IT, and we can help their businesses accelerate. And for us, more than anything else in the environment, that's going to help us grow. That allows us to really simplify such that customers can adopt technology with less friction and they can derive more benefit from it. Now, there's a lot of talk in the industry over the years about, you know, the productivity gap or productivity paradigm. And really what that is that there has not been a direct correlation between IT investment and increased productivity inside of major businesses, except those that have really understood how digital transformation can allow them to have a much tighter engagement with their customers, a much better access to new opportunities and revenue streams. And I think with cloud technologies, with a lot of things that vendors like Citrix and others are bringing, we can help make that productivity paradox, you know, a reality for our customers.
Citrix Systems CEO David Henschel speaking with us in his office in Fort Lauderdale. Still to come, working to transition a veteran tech company as the business changes fast.
You know, our customers are asking for this because, you know, they're starting to embrace cloud technologies, whether they're public cloud, private cloud, or more often than not, some hybrid in between.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Disruption is a favorite word to describe the climate for a lot of industries today. The retail industry has been disrupted by Amazon, cable television, disrupted by YouTube, media, disrupted by Facebook and Google. Software is no different. As people and companies change how they use technology, including on what devices, software companies have to respond or risk being innovated out of existence. David Henschel has been with Citrix Systems for 15 years, the last 6 months as the top boss. He's the third CEO Citrix has had in the past 2 years. It's been a time of change for the company, which can trace its founding roots to IBM. Before widespread internet use and cloud computing, Citrix developed software allowing computer users remote access to computers and servers. The products helped businesses communicate and collaborate even when they weren't in the same place. Now, more and more work is being done on mobile devices, and there's just more of it, more online transactions, more traffic, more work. And more of the backbone making the work possible exists in the cloud, where software services are offered on demand through the internet. As Citrix wrote in a strategy briefing, quote, "We are witnessing how upstarts and established firms in nearly every industry, from transportation to hospitality to financial services, are using digital technologies to challenge centuries-old beliefs, operating models, and even regulations," end quote. Speed, security, and access are all important. Think about how you use your smartphone. You've probably used an app to make a purchase. You want the app to communicate with the company quickly, and you want your personal information secure. Companies may be using different technologies or even different cloud service providers to get all that done. The growing complexity of cloud computing and software as a service are the opportunities where Citrix sees its future. Among the practical changes is a shift toward a subscription model for its services instead of making a series of one-time sales of its products. It expects to get 40% of its sales through subscriptions to this new strategy within 2 years. Shifting the business model of an established company is what we talked about next during our interview with Citrix Systems CEO David Henschel.
What we continue to hear across the globe is that enterprise technology inherently is complex. Therefore, it's hard. And if you don't have it really tuned optimally, it doesn't have the type of value that you would expect. And so the most fundamental part of the transformation at Citrix right now is, you know, transforming us into a subscription services, cloud services type model, where we move from that one-time sale to a continuous relationship. And by doing that, we can help abstract away a lot of this complexity from our end customer, while at the same time delivering a much faster innovation. So it's simpler and it's better.
What were the market conditions, though, that added pressure for the company to make that transition that it's still in the middle of?
Less about pressure and more about opportunity. You know, our customers are asking for this because, you know, they're starting to embrace cloud technologies, whether they're public cloud, private cloud, or more often than not, some hybrid in between. And, you know, we can be a part of making that more simple. In a way, what we do is we make hybrid cloud simple. We also make it secure, and we make it available. And if we can do those three things right, we're going to be very successful.
That success, as you mentioned earlier, is focused on the subscription model. How difficult has it been for a company like Citrix that had one kind of business model to make this transition into a much different type of business model for software here in the 21st century?
It's a journey, and it's obviously allowed us the opportunity to go through transformation and think about it very holistically. We have an office of transformation that's part of my team that really focuses on all of the projects throughout the entire company that need to transform. It's not just a product statement, but the way we engage with our customers, the way we build our products, the way we operate our systems, the way we support customers, all of those things have to change, and they all have to change fundamentally in this operating model. And so we've been going through that over the last 2 years. We just decided to accelerate that, and we're doing that because the opportunity is in front of us. Customers are asking for this type of service. We went from just over 15% of our revenue coming a year ago to 30% in Q4. So it's happening pretty quickly, and I think it's just a combination of, you know, right time, great technologies, and customer demand.
What's the growing pain been like? How has this changed even how you engage with the company?
A lot of it's communication and alignment. It's a different business model, especially for an organization that's been around for 30 years. And that's why we talk about it as a journey, because there is no single destination, but we can spend a lot of time internally talking about where we want the company to be in 3 years. And that's everything from the types of products we sell, the types of teams we have on board with skill sets, the type of financial outcomes, and then we work backwards. And so we've laid out our 2020 plan, and we've laid out what those goals need to look like across all kinds of dimensions, operational, financial, and others. And now we're working backwards on how do we build the programs and build the systems and build the processes to enable that over time.
How does that transformation impact your local and regional footprint here as it's traditionally been in Fort Lauderdale?
We're continuing to evolve really all functions, and we're investing in systems. A lot of our IT organization here in South Florida, we're investing in engineering. We're recruiting a lot across the various products that are represented in Fort Lauderdale. Different skill sets, cloud-first skills, networking skills, many different technical disciplines. And then overall, you know, similar to the rest of the global footprint, we all just have to be thinking about where the business needs to be, as I said, in a few years, and then we'll work backwards from there. So fortunately, we're in expansion mode. We'll be adding, you know, more than a couple of hundred just in the short term here in Fort Lauderdale.
Beyond the financial results, what are the other metrics that you will be paying attention to, as well as how the community should look at the transformation that Citrix is undergoing?
Well, beyond the financials, and those are obviously the easiest ones to see externally, internally we think about actual usage of our products, how our customers are using our products. We measure that on a regular basis. We measure how many customers are actually on the cloud. We measure internal employee satisfaction. There's metrics around all this, because one of the things that made Citrix, if you will, is that we've always been thought of as a great place to work. We've shown up on many lists around the globe in terms of, you know, various accolades and award for whether it's diversity in technology, whether it's a type of workforce that we have, whether it's our focus on innovation, and we're proud of that. In fact, we were just named the 19th happiest company in the U.S. And so those are good types of awards to have. And when you marry that with the financial success, we feel good about the trajectory we're on right now.
The company was built with the Fort Lauderdale headquarters. What role does South Florida play as you look at that 2020 transformation and beyond?
Well, South Florida is our corporate headquarters. As you said, we were in many ways, the genesis of Citrix goes back to IBM in Boca. And we've called this home for a long time. I spent the first half of my career living in Silicon Valley, and I moved to South Florida to join Citrix. We'll continue to look at this as corporate HQ, but we're a global company. We have a large presence in parts of Asia, a large presence in Europe. We have development locations in places like Silicon Valley and Raleigh and Boston and others. But Fort Lauderdale is home, and Fort Lauderdale is our largest location.
And no plans to look elsewhere?
No plans.
Speaking with David Henschel, the CEO at Citrix Systems. Still to come, as South Florida tries to attract Amazon here to build its second headquarters, Citrix is a veteran of the local technology industry ecosystem and what it needs to grow stronger.
From my perspective, we've gone from being, very, very focused on our tourism infrastructure to a nice balance of tourism plus sustainable business in other areas like technology.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Measured in technology time, Citrix Systems is a veteran for South Florida. It was founded in 1989 by Ed Iacobucci. He worked at IBM, helping the company spark the personal computing boom in the 1980s. He was offered a top job at Microsoft in the late 1980s, but instead began Citrix Systems. He retired in 2000. He died in 2013 from cancer. David Henschel, the current CEO, began at the company 15 years ago, moving to its Fort Lauderdale headquarters. Citrix maintains two headquarters, one in Broward County and one in Santa Clara, California, in Silicon Valley. The two HQs, and its almost 30 years in business here, gives Citrix a unique perspective on South Florida's efforts to build up its technology industry. Miami has been ranked number one in the country for startups by the Kauffman Foundation, but it lags in scale-ups, companies getting bigger fast. And this ranking does not concentrate solely on tech firms. Now, the region has experienced some big tech wins, though. Construction software company eBuilder was recently bought for $500 million. It's based in Plantation. Online pet store Chewy was bought for more than $3 billion. Chewy's based in Fort Lauderdale. And startup Magic Leap in Plantation has raised close to $2 billion from investors like Google, Fidelity, and China's Alibaba for its ultra-secret augmented reality technology. Now, this is the regional ecosystem that hopes to attract Amazon's second headquarters. South Florida is one of 20 finalists for the company that it is considering. It's also the environment in which Citrix Systems and its CEO, David Henschel, are veterans of.
I moved here from Silicon Valley. And so, you know, living in Silicon Valley, especially during the rise of the internet, you do believe that that is the center of the technology world. And in many ways, it's still the center of a lot of innovation. But what you recognize over time is that innovation and growth and opportunity can come anywhere in the globe. And when my wife and I moved to South Florida, you know, we were joining Citrix as a reasonably small to mid-sized company with ambitions to become a global powerhouse. And we've been on that journey nonstop for the last 15 years. I've seen the area evolve in many ways. You know, from my perspective, we've gone from being, very, very focused on our tourism infrastructure to a nice balance of tourism plus sustainable business in other areas like technology. We're investing in our infrastructure. I look across our physical infrastructure, whether it's our roads or our rail system or our airports or others, and you know the continuous investment in that is very important going forward.
What's your perception of where the South Florida technology industry is today? Where does it stand nationally as well as globally?
It continues to move up. And one of the reasons why Citrix continues to invest here, and it's great, really excited when we see new technology companies pop up, when you see investment in venture capital, investment in startups, because that just broadens the overall ecosystem. Sometimes that means we lose great employees to a new hot startup, and that's okay when we think about it from more of a regional point of view, because that builds the ecosystem, that creates investment, that draws talent in. And so, we tend to look at it holistically. I mean, selfishly, sometimes we get boomerangs that come back to the organization because we're doing some really cool, innovative things here at Citrix as well. So, the more we can do to grow South Florida, the better off we're going to be.
Given the size of Citrix and the fact that it operates globally, do you think that regionally it gets the respect it deserves?
Haven't really thought about it from a respect point of view. I mean, I think we're probably a top five employer in Broward County. We know that we bring very high paying, great high tech jobs to the area, and we are part of the community. We participate, and our teammates participate in lots of local business initiatives, as well as lots of nonprofit and social and other types of initiatives across the board. So, we're very happy with South Florida, and we'll continue to invest here. And we like it. It's home.
A lot of the technology interest locally has been focused on that startup and that entrepreneurial scale-up side. Has that been at the cost of attention to established large public companies like a Citrix?
I think if we can build innovation across the area, it helps companies like Citrix. It helps the talent pools, it helps retention, or it helps focus on the area, it helps a lot of things. So the more we can continue to expand the quality of life in Florida, expand the talent, expand the opportunities in the ecosystem, it benefits everybody.
What should South Florida import from a Silicon Valley in terms of growing its technology industry as an effort to diversify its local workforce and economy?
And continued focus on innovation, continued focus on bringing venture capital, continued focus on, you know, keeping Florida a great place to live, whether that is broader from a tax environment, a business environment, an overall educational system. All of these things play into, you know, what is going to help South Florida continue to be successful long term.
Conversely, what should South Florida reject in terms of importing from a place like Silicon Valley?
Well, unfortunately, the challenge in Silicon Valley right now is, you know, cost, crowds, traffic.
Some would argue that's the challenge here as well.
Well, having lived in both cases, it's certainly much more pronounced on the West Coast.
So I suppose then the question becomes, especially for somebody with experience in both of those places, how does this local community protect against those liabilities? Or those challenges brought on by technological success?
Sometimes it's a challenge of success. It with success comes crowds, comes density, comes traffic, comes other things. And it's a balance. You need to balance the two, and long-term planning helps. You know, long-term planning, thinking about the broader area from a physical infrastructure point of view, and the continued renovation I see in various areas, including right around here by the Citrix HQ, those all help make, you know, companies like Citrix more successful. And when that comes for recruiting people internationally or from other parts of the U.S., you know, South Florida, you know, sometimes has to sell itself. And, you know, we believe we've got a great place to live here, and we just need to make sure that we keep it that way.
One of the most recent sales jobs locally on technology is regarding Amazon, of course, and that South Florida was part of the 20 cities picked by Amazon for their final consideration. Are you involved in the bid at all?
No, we're not. Amazon's a great customer of ours, but we're not involved in their expansion plans.
What would an HQ2 for Amazon mean for this community, and what would it mean for Citrix in Fort Lauderdale?
It would mean a tremendous demand on local hiring. There would be, in the short term, it would be something that, you know, we'd have to be both beneficiary of, as well as, you know, very careful of, because there'll be a huge pull on our talent pool as well. So longer term, it'll help bring a lot to the area. So I think it would be fantastic for Florida in general. And just in the short term, we'll manage around that with the demands that a company the size and scale of Amazon would pull.
You operate in a couple of communities that have made that short list, Raleigh being another one. You also are familiar, obviously, with the Silicon Valley. Is this something that you welcome in a community that you already have a significant workforce footprint in technology?
Yeah, I think growth of very high-paying jobs, very highly skilled jobs, and the demand for that will benefit any community. I mean, of course, it brings the challenges we've talked about just from a density point of view, but I think net-net, it's a very strong benefit for wherever a great company like Amazon lands.
And how would you talk about this community and the opportunity for an HQ2 here as a working publicly traded technology CEO in South Florida, if you are to be asked by your fellow publicly traded technology CEO, who's a Miami native, Jeff Bezos, what would you tell him?
Sales pitch would be around quality of life, retention of our employee base, and just the continuity that we've been able to build. And as opposed to an area like Silicon Valley that employees maybe stay 1 or 2 years at any given employer on average before they move on, you know, we have a multiple of that. And that allows us to really have a vision that is many, many years in the future, because that continuity allows us to really get everybody on the same page. And, you know, transformation, for example, doesn't happen overnight. It happens over the course of years. And then that level of continuity from a workforce is very powerful. It's very beneficial.
Why do you think large technology companies haven't embraced South Florida over the past decade or so as it's really put an effort through this technology ecosystem. And what I mean by that is the tax structure here is very well known. The quality of life here, the weather, very well known. Those are not things that a technology CEO is going to discover all of a sudden. So what has held back the technology ecosystem here?
Moving a company is hard. It's hard and it's expensive. And generally, once companies are planted somewhere, they'll expand in other areas. But in terms of a wholesale move, it just takes time. And so I'd say that the South Florida community needs